98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Thursday in Phoenix. It's January 2nd and Dave Burns has already taken days off in 2020.
And it took
It didn't take long.
And you were about to say Monday, weren't you?
I was going to say Monday, yeah.
It feels very like much a Monday. Feels
doesn't like it feel a like a Monday?
Oh, definitely.
So Burns you off today and tomorrow. Did not take long. He said, calendar's changing. I need days off. So Burnsy's already off in the start of the new year. But I am here. Jordan Burns filling in. Mitch is filling in for Jordan. We've got Sarah. So we've got most of the team. Burns will be off today and tomorrow. And we'll get you through a lot of stuff going on with the Suns. We got Cardinals talk. We got the NFL. Lots of things going on. But first off, Happy New Year.
Same to you, Gambo.
Everybody have a good New Year?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Anybody do anything crazy and wild?
No. I took my boyfriend to the airport the next morning.
Not that I would admit on radio anyways if I had.
New Year's just seems so overrated to me. It really does.
It's very overrated. Yeah.
Did everyone at least make it to midnight?
No.
Really?
We had to get up at 5 for a flight the next morning, so no.
Yeah, midnight in New York.
Yes, yeah. Correct. I did.
10 p.m. Yeah.
I always judged it by that. Yep, the ball's dropping in New York. We're good. It's New Year's.
I mean, Gambo did something a little bit crazy
I know.
On New Year's Eve.
Well, it wasn't me. It's my lovely wife, who you guys all know.
Yes.
She adopted an older dog. She went to a rescue, and she rescued a nine-year-old Shiba Inu. Inu? Shiba Inu.
I think it's dog. Inu.
Inu?
I have no idea.
I don't know either. But it's never had a home. It's never had a family. It was a product of the damn puppy mill. It was an abused dog. And then when she got too old to make babies, she went to a rescue. So Chelsea... She went out the other day. I thought she was going shopping. The next thing I know, she's on her way home, and there's a picture of a dog in the back of the car. So she literally just
hopped right in there.
Technically, she went shopping for a dog.
She stopped at a rescue, and she saw this poor nine-year-old dog, and this dog has never had a life. It's never had a family. So she said, I'm taking the dog. And so she took the dog, and now we have another dog in the house. We only have two dogs, but she literally rescued a nine-year-old dog. That's literally never had a family. It's never had a home. It's never been on walks. It's never had it's just never had anything.
Well, and I saw on Twitter yesterday it was getting quite accommodated to your backyard.
It was. It was. I put pictures up because you know me. I always let my it's good and bad, but for the most part, I have no problem like having my personal life out there.
Yeah.
You know, who my wife is, what my family's doing and stuff like that. I've always let my personal life out there. And that's just me and that's who I am. So I have pictures of the dog roaming around in the backyard. But I will say this for old people out there. I mean, take a look at adopting older dogs. Like, the older dogs never get adopted. A lot of the times they die in those shelters, and the shelters do the best they can. And there's a lot of good rescues out there. And so if you have a chance to donate blankets to a rescue, instead of throwing out a bunch of comforters and blankets, the rescues and the pounds, and those places need the blankets. So if you have a chance to donate blankets or towels or $20 to a shelter or a pound or anything like that, I think it's well worth it. Or an older dog, if you have a chance to give an older dog a home for the last 3 or 4 years of its life. So that's what Chelsea decided to do. So we've got a new addition to the family.
It's a big 2020 already for the Gambadora house.
It is. But you know what? I support her and stuff like that. Yeah. All right, so that's it. That's what everybody did for New Year's. You went to the airport, you did nothing, and we ended up with a nine-year-old dog.
Fantastic.
Mitch, anything great, Mitch?
I hung out with people. You
hung out with people?
Classic New Year's. Somebody smoked pork belly, and it was amazing.
It was good?
Yeah, really, really good.
All right. Did it smell good or just taste good?
Both. It was both.
It was both?
There are those sometimes where you have meats that are like, they smell really, really good, but then you eat it, and you're like, they did not do this properly.
Right. But yours was good.
It was very good.
When you started talking about someone smoked something, I thought you were going down a different road there, Mitch.
No.
Can you leave Colorado out of this, please?
We do hope that everybody had a really good New Year's. Thanks for coming back to us and listening on this Thursday. We'll take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by 3010 Weight Loss for Life.
All right, the Phoenix Suns, they had a nice win over Portland the other night, and then they played the Lakers, and literally, man, they got humiliated in the first half of that basketball game. And I mean humiliated. I mean, that was really ugly watching that first half, and that was a part of me. There was a part of me last night that was like, I'm not even going to watch the second half. I was like, "I there's got to be something better than I can do." I mean, the Suns were down by 36 points, man. They were getting busted, and it was ugly. It was really bad. But they made a game of it for two reasons. One, they played with pride in the second half. They did. They played with pride. They didn't give up. They came out. They played hard. And two, in all honesty, the Lakers stopped playing. And let's, you gotta call it as it is. The Lakers stopped playing. They clearly were in that mode where LeBron was going to take the fourth quarter off, and they just, they were up by so much that they allowed the Phoenix Suns to get back into the game. They didn't put the step on the Suns' throat. So part of it is that the Suns did play with pride, and the other part of it is that the Lakers just literally stopped playing basketball to where LeBron was in the game all the way through the fourth quarter, and had to be, because the Suns had a chance. I mean, if Tyler Johnson could have hit the broadside of a barn, my God, every time he took a three in that fourth quarter, he missed them. He took like four of them, and he missed every one. But they had a shot to cut it to four. Tyler Johnson had the ball in his hands. He took a three. If that would have went in, it would have been cut to four with a little bit under 2 minutes to play, but he missed the shot. LeBron comes back on the other end. He hits a shot. The Lakers end up winning 117-107.
It wasn't to the same extent as the Laker game, but it was very similar feel to the Portland game. A terrible first quarter that buried the Suns. However, in the Portland game, you're playing a less talented team that you have the ability to come back against. They just ran out of time. They dug themselves too deep of a hole. That's what concerns me, though, is, yeah, hey, that's great that they are 1-1 in these last two games, and what a huge win that was over Portland. But the same thing that plagued them last night plagued them again in Portland as well, just coming out absolutely flat and having to spend the rest of the game to bury yourselves out of a pathetic first quarter.
Yeah, and that's something that's just, you know, that team has, they've got so much size. They're like the only team in the league that can protect the rim for 48 minutes. With Dwight, with McGee, with Anthony Davis, they literally can protect the rim the entire game. They can protect the rim. And a lot of teams don't have that. You know, a lot of times when your best big goes out, that's when teams can attack the rim and score some points in the paint because, you know, you're not going to play your best big 48 minutes. But the Lakers with McGee, Dwight Howard, and AD literally are always protecting the rim. They're very difficult. It's a bad matchup for Phoenix. But I do give them credit for coming back. And one of the big storylines to me was DeAndre Ayton. Because, you know, he ended up picking up his fifth foul with about 2.5 minutes left. But if you look at his game overall, DeAndre Ayton was 7 of 13 from the field, 16 points, 14 rebounds. That is a lot of talk with rumors and speculation that Karl Anthony Towns may get traded, and now maybe he's not going to get traded, and that, you know, would the Suns swap Ayton in a deal to get Karl Anthony Towns? You make Booker happy, you bring in a top five player at his position, probably third. To me, he's probably the third best player in the league at his position behind Embiid and Jokic. But here's the thing with DeAndre, and this is really, it's a difficult thing because he's a very talented kid. He's not a bust, man. I had people on Twitter, oh, he's a bust. Man, 16 rebounds in a basketball game. He had 14 points and 16 rebounds. He's a good player. And you just got to keep working and developing him. He's going to get better, and there's no way he's going to be a bust in this league. There's no way. He is a good basketball player.
See, but just right there, I think that has a lot of Suns fans nervous. That if DeAndre Ayton is just a good basketball player, even if he's not a bust, just a good basketball player, that's not enough considering he was the number one pick and also you passed up on Luka.
Listen, he's played 1 year of college basketball, played in one NCAA tournament game, and now he's in the NBA, and he's a good player. I think he's very good. But you haven't had enough time to develop him. And so everybody wants to bet. Like, I would probably trade Ayton in a package for Towns now because they're similar in age and Towns is a great player offensively. He's a terrible defensive
player. He's already established. You already know what Kat's going to be. We still don't know what Ayton is going to be.
No, and I think where Ayton could pass, Ayton might be better than him defensively now. He might be better than him defense because Karl Anthony Towns doesn't play any defense. He doesn't want to play any defense. He doesn't play any defense. He wants to shoot the three and he wants to score. And he's very, very good at it. He's very good. Like I said, probably the third best player at his position. You know, Ayton is like, you know, everybody wants they want the guy to be great now.
Instant gratification.
And I understand that because the Suns have been bad for so long, but it may literally take him some time to develop. It may take them some time to work him into being a great player, to get coaching. He didn't play the first 25 games this year. You know, last year he played under a coach who was a first-year coach. He wasn't developed the way you would want him to be developed. And now you've got a veteran coach in Monty and a coaching staff that can work with him. Do you want to give up on him too early? That's the question. Do you feel like you want to give up on Ayton too early? And if you could get a Karl-Anthony Towns, the answer might be yes. But outside of that, I don't see the signs of this kid not being a good, you know, a very good basketball. Now, can he be great? Could be a superstar? Developing will tell. He needs to be developed.
Yeah. And
he
needs
to be.
The one thing that gives me some optimism about this is that I think the Suns do have a nucleus in place now that can help develop him. Having Monty Williams, having guys like Mark Bryant that can help tutor him. Oh, that was my computer. Yeah. I wasn't even messing with anything.
I was wondering where that was going.
Yeah, my bad.
Well, like somebody's playing like disco music.
Yeah, no, that's like new
feature. Let's talk about this nucleus.
Yeah. No, but with DeAndre Ayton, I completely agree with you that it's way too early, unless it's someone like Karl Anthony Towns. But if we're talking about some of these other players that have been bantied about, like Kevin Love or even Gallinari, I think it's way too early to be having that conversation with DeAndre Ayton because he has yet to even play a full NBA season with his career games. He did that without even a point guard most of the time.
Yeah. The kid's a good player. He's not. It's frustrating because he was the number one overall pick and you want him to be great right away. So it's frustrating. But go out there and get 16 rebounds. If he's a guy that's going to get you 12 to 14 rebounds a game, if he could give you some protection in the post, if he could score a little bit, I don't know that he'll ever be the 30-point, 15-rebound guy. But can he be a 20-point, 12-rebound guy, a 20-point, 13- or 14-rebound guy? It's possible that he could be a 20-and-12 guy, in my opinion. And that's a really good center in this league. That's a really good center.
The one thing I keep saying to Suns fans, if we were going to make this quick of a judgment on Devin Booker, where would the Suns have been? When Devin Booker was in the early stages of his second year
off the bench
and had just played about 80 career games, if you were ready to throw him out with the bathwater the way you were with Ayton, you would have missed on something special. And look how time and patience can change a player over that period of time.
It does seem like there are people that are frustrated with Ayton because it's not the development isn't coming along as quickly as possible. Let's not forget he was suspended for 25 games.
Yeah.
So he played a handful of games right now. I still really believe in Ayton's ability to be a great player. The Cardinals have a decision to make with DJ Humphries. Will they make the right one? We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Each day over these next couple of weeks, we're going to take a Cardinal topic, a decision that the Cardinals have to make. And kind of dissect it and go over it and tell you what we think and what we know and just break it down. So each day we'll do something a little bit different. And we're going to start it off today with the decision on DJ Humphries, not David Johnson.
Yep.
But we're going to go with the left tackle DJ Humphries, who had his best year with the Cardinals, did a really good job, and is a player that, that they drafted, that they've developed, that, you know, was able to stay healthy this year. And there was a lot of questions about him going into this season. Can he stay healthy? Is he worth it? Are they going to keep him? What are they going to have to pay him if he has a good year? And then you look at what, you know, the year he had, and you start to question, are they going to keep him? The Cardinals want to keep DJ Humphries. They want to keep him. The expectations that I'm hearing is, you know, it's going to be anywhere, you know, somewhere between probably a three and a 5 year deal. I think the Cardinals would prefer three. I think DJ Humphries would prefer four or five. But he's had some injury history, so that could make you more likely to want to go to a lower deal, a three-year deal, rather than a four- or five-year deal. But if he hit free agency, you are talking about a guy who would be one of the best offensive tackles available in free agency.
I just did a quick little search on, you know, top free agents coming up this 2020 season. And in one ranking on NFL trade rumors, they have him as the third best offensive tackle that could be available. And so you're looking at a guy in terms of going a different route. If you don't get DJ Humphries, it would probably be a step back in terms of the level of play that you're going to get from that position. It's not going to be a player as talented. You're not going to get a better player than DJ Humphries. So it really comes down to the financials. And if whatever that price tag is for him, do you think it's worth it bringing him back?
I think he is. I think you do bring him back. But I do think you take into, you know, availability is a big thing with DJ Humphries, right? And he hasn't been available a whole lot. So I think that helps the Cardinals when you're negotiating, is that he just, you know, he's missed a lot of time. Now, from his perspective, hey, now I just proved that I can play a full 16-game season. I wasn't hurt. Look what I can do. He just turned 26 years old. Mm-hmm. He just turned 26. The Eagles just gave Lane Johnson. Now, he's been a couple times Pro Bowl player. He's played in a lot of games. They just gave him a contract of 4 years and $72 million with $55 million guaranteed, right around $55 million guaranteed. There's no way DJ Humphries gets anything close to that amount in guaranteed money. Nate Solder, when he signed with the Giants, got $35 million guaranteed. So I think you're probably looking at a contract, and this is where you got to decide, do you want to keep him? You're probably somewhere between $13 and $16 million per year to keep DJ Humphries. $13 to $16 million. Before the year started, you were probably looking at about $10 million. But he played well enough to now he's in that $13 to $16 million range. Before this season, just based on, you know, the fact that he didn't play a whole lot and was injured, before this season, if you were going to keep him, you were probably looking at somewhere around $10 million.
You know, really, this is a, in a backwards way, this is a good problem to have, to be thinking how much, how can we get DJ Humphries to stay on the cheap? Because the question was answered in my mind this past season that he is the right guy moving forward. Had he not had the season that he had this past year, or had he had some injuries, DJ Humphries becomes just as big of a question as David Johnson or some of these other questions that are plaguing the Cardinals going into this offseason. The fact that you have your left tackle and you have your quarterback, which to me are the two cornerstones for an NFL offense, call it a day and let's move on. I mean, it is.
Played in 100% of the snaps.
Yeah.
Last year he played in 55%. The year before he played in 18%. And that's what DJ Humphries is going to look at. He's going to say, look, I played 100%. Look what I could do. I'm a tackle. I'm a franchise left tackle. You sign me, you've got your left tackle for the next 4 or 5 years. You don't got to worry about it.
Well, and two, and the bigger point, there were four of the five offensive linemen for the Arizona Cardinals this year that played all 16 games. Plus the addition of Sean Coogler. This is the best status the Cardinals offensive line has been in, maybe in the history of them coming to Arizona, in terms of having four guys that played for the whole season. A.Q. Shipley, I know, is a free agent, so you still got to figure out him. But if he can agree to a deal, you're going to have basically your entire offensive line coming back from a unit that played the previous full season and, oh, by the way, has one of the great offensive line coaches, well-respected throughout the rest of the NFL.
And that could be one of the reasons why DJ Humphries, at 26 years old, just turned 26, so he played this whole year at 25. His birthday was just the other day. That may be one of the reasons why DJ Humphries played so well. He got good coaching, right? He had a great coach in Coogler, did a good job. So you've got to keep, so he's going to play these next 4 years at 26, 27, 28, and 29. If you sign him to a four-year deal, he's not going to hit 30 years old until that contract expires for the next 4 years. So DJ Humphries is a guy that's a priority for them. And you got to remember the other thing, too. They've missed on a lot of first-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got a guy that hit as a first-round pick, or at least you feel he's hit as a first-round pick, that you want to keep DJ Humphries. You want to make sure that he comes back. So that's the other thing. But, you know, they've missed on a bunch of these, and now they've got a guy that they like, and they want to make sure they keep him, because if you get that play in the second contract, many times that is the way to identify that you made a good draft pick, that you bring the guy back for another contract.
Last week, DJ Humphries met with the media and talked about how big it was for him playing this full season.
Playing the full season was huge for me this year. This is like one of my biggest goals to date, you know, to be able to check this part off. Now I feel like I can really start trying to accomplish my goals that I really set for myself in the NFL, you know, and it's one of those things that's kind of surreal. Me and my lady was talking about it the other day. It was like, man, the end of the season's here already, but it feel like it took so long at the same time. And I was like, yeah, because we've been around for a while this year, so we've been hanging in there this year, so it's fun. But it's super exciting to be here with my guys, and it's one of those things I showed myself that I can do it now, so it's a good confidence booster for something other than my play on the field. Didn't miss a game, didn't miss a practice, and that's pretty big for me.
Yeah, that's another factor, just the confidence level. He mentioned it there at the end. Now that he has this full season under his belt, now that he knows he's capable of doing it, it hopefully can become second nature for him down the road.
Yeah, I think when you look at the contract for DJ, if I just wanted to, you know, kind of ballpark it, you're probably looking at a four-year deal at around $14 to $15 million a year. Just say it's $15 million a year. You're up to $60 million over 4 years, and you're probably going to have to guarantee a good portion of that, like around $30 million. So that's, you know, when I look at the numbers, I look at Nate Solder and I look at Lane Johnson, and you start to look at the tackles that are out there. You're probably, again, you're somewhere between $13 and $16 million. You know, he's going to want a 5-year deal. The Cardinals are probably going to want a 3-year deal, and they'll probably agree on a 4-year deal. You're probably talking at about $60 million with somewhere in the neighborhood, give or take a few million bucks, because I don't know.
Yeah.
But this is a pretty good guess. Somewhere in the neighborhood of like $30 million guaranteed for DJ Humphries. He was a starting left tackle and he did a good job. And if he hits free agency, somebody's going to say, oh, wow, there's a 26-year-old left tackle on the market that was a first-round draft pick. And he played all 16 games last year, and he played pretty well.
Yeah, to me, it's not even a question. The one thing, though, that is going to be interesting is I know you've said in the past, somewhere around, 90 to 100 million potentially is what the money the Cardinals could have this offseason. So if you're paying him 15 a year, and it's on the low scale of that, around 90 million, that's a sizable chunk that you may have to start getting creative, and you might have to go look at other plans B and C's to address other position holes that you have on this roster.
Yeah, the most important thing is to retain the players that you like, right? Because now you get continuity on the offensive line. You've got a guy that could be a leader on that offensive line. The offensive line, we said this right from the beginning, the offensive line was playing better, and we recognized it very early in the season. It was a good offensive line. It wasn't great. It wasn't top 10, but it was good. It was adequate. It did a very good job at times of protecting Murray, breaking open holes for the run game. AQ was healthy. That helped a lot. Justin was healthy. That helped a lot. DJ was healthy. And DJ Humphries played 100% of the snaps, played in all 16 games. I think that's going to lend to probably a four-year contract for DJ Humphries to stay. All right, the Phoenix Suns are in the rumor mill. Several players have been rumored as targets for the Phoenix Suns. We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, Sanderson Ford on 51st Avenue in Glendale. Go get yourself a new F-150 truck at Sanderson Ford. They have our poll question today. Sarah, what do you got?
All right, guys. Devin Booker currently sitting ninth in the Western Conference for guards in NBA All-Star voting. They put out their first returns for fan voting today. Again, sitting ninth in the Western Conference for guards. So does Devin Booker deserve to make the NBA All-Star team this year? I've got three options for you. Yes, he deserves to be a starter. Yes, he deserves to be a reserve. Or no, he does not deserve to be an All-Star.
I thought he was a lock. And in his last couple of weeks, has me very nervous.
Okay.
He's not going to get in on the fan voting, obviously.
No, he never was going to.
He's behind Caruso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally behind Caruso.
Couple hundred votes.
Yes.
We tweeted the list. It's below our poll question. So if anyone wants to see the first fan returns, we've got that for you under the poll.
See, I almost disagree with you in the sense I feel like he's demonstrated more weapons in his arsenal over maybe more over the last week than the last 3 weeks, but the Portland game and the L.A. game, he has attempted one three-pointer.
Because his shot abandoned him. His three-point shot is abandoned.
But what does that say about a great player that when one of his key shots is gone, he is still contributing? I mean, he's putting up 30 points in these games still.
Well, what was it, a seven-game losing streak?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, to answer Sarah's question, he is an all-star, but he is a reserve.
Yeah, he would definitely be a reserve.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll stick with that. I think these next few weeks are crucial for Devin Booker to prove he's an all-star. Definitely, I desperately want him to get there, but I think these next few weeks will tell.
Yeah. But it's what does he deserve is the question. So 60% of our voters say yes, he does deserve to be an all-star as a reserve. 21% say yes as a starter. 20% say no, he doesn't deserve to be an all-star.
All right. You could vote on the Burns and Gambo page on Twitter. Make sure you follow the page. Thanks, Sarah. We'll touch back a little bit later in the show. We'll give you the results if you're tuning in. All right, let's talk about some of these trade rumors that are going on with the Phoenix Suns. There was a couple, and we'll track this stuff down. And we have James Jones coming on the show in about a half hour, so we'll talk to the Suns GM in a half hour. But let's talk about a couple of the rumors that are out there. One is Oklahoma City and Danilo Gallinari. He is 31 years old. He's been in this league for a long time. He's a very good player, a very good scorer in this league. He's a power forward, and his name has been linked to the Suns. I don't know, again, I don't know that the Suns are close to doing anything with anybody at this point, but these are now people starting to look at players who could be traded and trying to see where they fit. And there was a Bleacher Report story that kind of linked the Suns having interest in Danilo Gallinari from Oklahoma City. So let's talk about Gallinari a little bit, because he's a good player. The biggest question with him always is health. Can he stay healthy? The other question, when you look at it, If you look at the standings,
yes,
I mean, they're seventh in the West.
Why would they trade him? That's my biggest question.
Like, they got rid of Russell Westbrook. They're seventh in the West. They've got a 5-game lead over Portland, who's ninth. So they've got a 5-game lead, 6th in the loss column, over the team that's closest to catching them for a playoff spot, and that would be Portland. San Antonio's behind them in the 8th spot, and San Antonio's 3.5 games behind them. That's like, I always look at that. Why would you, if you're Oklahoma City, and he's been really good for you, and he's been relatively healthy the last year and a half, why would you trade Gallinari if you got a chance to make the playoffs?
That's the whole problem with this Western Conference this year. Because basically, if you're anyone besides Golden State, and to a lesser extent New Orleans, you're still in this battle for the 8th seed. Now, how many teams are going to actually risk giving up a valuable asset to get the 8th seed and probably get swept or lose in 5 games to the Lakers in the first round? That still remains to be seen. But I don't think any of these teams right now are honestly ready to pull a trigger on any of it, because we still don't know who's going to distinguish themselves out of the rest of this pack, out of the rest of this group.
Listen, he's played in 28 games this year. He is averaging 18 points a game. Now, he'd be a good addition for Phoenix because he draws a lot of attention defensively. So, like, when you play the Lakers, Anthony Davis has to guard Gallinari. And Gallinari usually gets him in foul trouble because he's a tough matchup. He could score. He's been in this league for a long time. He's a very, very good scorer. So he would be an upgrade over Dario Saric if they could get him. I still think more than anything, the Suns need a better backup point guard. They're not getting enough out of Okobo or Javon Carter, and Ty Jerome's going to take some time to develop. They need another playmaker. They need somebody else that's a better backup point guard right now than what they have. Gallinari's a power forward, not a point guard, but that's a guy in Gallinari who would be an upgrade, and if he's healthy, because he's had some problems staying healthy in his career, he's a guy that can help you even though he's 31 years old.
But that's a big point to me. I mean, you look at his game logs over the last year. Yeah, he's played 28 games this year, and he played 68 the year before. But 21, 63, 53, 59, 43, 14. Those are some of his game totals per season.
Right.
So
scary.
It is. It's very scary. I mean, he has yet to play anywhere close to a full season, except for maybe back in his second year, which was 2009, 2010.
I think his contract is pretty, you know, I think he's got like 1 year left on his contract, too. I got to look.
No, he's a free agent after this year.
Is it after this year?
Yes.
Isn't there some money guaranteed next year?
Let me take a gander.
Signed a 3-year, $64 million contract. Just trying to see if there's any guaranteed money for next year if you would have to take him on. So, no,
he's an unrestricted free agent.
$22 million this year and an unrestricted free agent next year.
That concerns me even more so, because what are you having to give up in terms of your pieces to rent a guy that you're not 100% certain is going to re-sign?
You know, you're probably not going to give up a whole lot to get him if you don't think you're going to re-sign him, and you might not want to re-sign him. But the other thing is, the power forward you have right now is an unrestricted free agent as well.
Yeah.
And Dario Saric, he's a free agent.
That's a valid point,
this year,
yeah,
too. So you'd be giving up. You don't want to give up anything of value for a guy that you don't believe can stay and is part of your long-term plans. He would be a guy that, if you're trying to make the playoffs, that he could help you because he's an upgrade. But you've got to look where they are right now in those playoff standings. I mean, that losing streak did some damage to the Phoenix Suns. They're behind a couple of teams now.
Yeah, now it's not just Gallinari. There's another name that has been rumored for a while. Not this time specifically to the Suns, but Mark Stein tweeted out over the New Year's holiday that the Cleveland Cavaliers have a renewed sense of optimism that they'll be able to deal Kevin Love before the NBA trade deadline. In terms of Gallinari or Kevin Love, sign me up for Gallinari over Kevin Love.
But Kevin Love you would have for a number of years. Gallinari might only have for 3 or 4 months.
But I just don't like Love as a fit in Phoenix.
I'd rather take that money and use it somewhere else, to be honest with you, to try to get a different player. I mean, Love to me is just, the contract is just too big. Good player when he's healthy. Same thing with Gallinari. Good player when he's healthy. Love's contract is, I mean, you got a lot of money left on that contract with Kevin Love. Gallinari's a free agent, you know, after this year, but you know, if you felt like you could make the playoffs and you just want to get over that hump and get Booker in, and got, you know, if you don't have to give up a lot to get Gallinari, I would think you'd do it. Just if you feel like that's a piece that will get you over the hump and get you into the playoffs. But as long as you don't have to give anything up. The other rumor that's out there is that the Clippers could have some interest in Aaron Baines, because obviously he's a better defensive player than the guy that they would give up in Ivica Zubac. Zubac is good. He's 22 years old. He was a second-round pick. He's a good player. He's on a real friendly contract of 4 years and $28 million. He'd be a really good backup center to DeAndre Ayton. And here's the thing. There's a big age difference between him and Baines. I brought this up when Baines got off to a hot start. Like, do you trade him and try to get something for him?
Well, he certainly has crashed back down to earth.
Well, of course he has. Yeah. But he's got playoff experience. And if a team like the Clippers says, look, I'd like to get off of Zubac's contract, I'll take Baines, because the Clippers are going to try to win it this year. You got Kawhi, you got Paul George. To them, Baines may be an upgrade over Zubac to try to win it this year. So they'd be willing to get rid of Zubac, get Baines in there, try to win it now, and then the Suns would have a guy for the next 3 years after this year on the contract who's a 7-foot, good, you know, solid player. He's got good hands. He's got a big body. He plays hard. He's young. So that could be something you look at. I've always talked about that. Like, if Baines plays well, some team may say, hey, listen, I'll take Baines for the playoffs, because the Suns may not be able to, you may not want to keep Baines. I like him, but he is, you know what, 32 years old?
Yeah, and he really has come back down to earth since his start. I mean, the talk of him being the most improved player in the NBA this season, that's out the window. He's come back down to earth. The one thing, though, with Zubac as well, his game logs, once again, 35 games played this year, 26 last year, 33 the year before. These guys, well, and it's natural. If you're dealing in the trade market, it's not a piece that is perfect, but probably another guy that you have to be a little apprehensive about in terms of the games that he has played over the course of his career.
You know, for $7 million a year for your backup center, though, and he's young, it's something you look at. So far this year, he's been relatively healthy. So, you know, we'll see. But that's something the Suns have to decide. And as we get closer, we'll, you know, update you. We'll have James Jones on the program in about 15 minutes. So we'll talk to James about the Suns, the game last night, and what they may do in the future. All right, ASU. They beat Florida State in a bowl game, and their defense stepped up big time. We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Blackman to throw on third down. The pass intercepted by Willie Hart, and he's going to take it into the end zone. A pick six for Willie Hart, and an Arizona State touchdown that gives the Sun Devils the lead with 10:06 left to go in the Sun Bowl.
All right, two parts here. Congratulations to ASU, Herm Edwards. They got the win. No Eno Benjamin, no Brandon Ayuk. Florida State, it's a big-time program, but they've been down on their luck the last few years. They're making a change. Mike Norvell.
They didn't have quite a few of their guys
as well.
They
had a lot of their guys out for a bunch of different reasons, too, not just not playing. But they had suspensions, and they had injuries.
An interim head coach.
They interviewed Mike Norvell during the game. About taking over that job. It's interesting because Mike Norvell obviously was here at ASU, and then he was there watching the game, and they would say, oh, you'll be the head coach of this team in about 3 hours. But he did an interview up in the booth. Tony White's defense was terrific. I mean, did a great job. 6 turnovers in the game for ASU. So the new defensive coordinator, his defense was terrific. That was a really, really boring football game. It was. It was an awful game to watch. I mean, it was field goal, field goal, field goal, and you were just waiting for something. Florida State then got 2 touchdowns. The first one they got was set up by a trick play where the quarterback threw it to the wide receiver, then it went back to the quarterback, and then they ran for 18 yards, and then they got a 3-yard touchdown run. The other one was just a bomb, like a 91-yard bomb that they threw, and then they went ahead, and then ASU won the game with obviously the play you just played, the pick six for a touchdown, but 6 turnovers forced by ASU's defense. Some of these games, though, I mean, they're tough to watch. They are tough. I mean, Texas beat the hell out of Utah. I mean, I was at Utah just as down. You know, when you have a chance to play for everything and you blow it, you get down. And Utah, after they lost that game to Oregon, like they had their sights set on playing in the playoffs.
Did you see what Tyler Huntley said after the game?
And he was awful. He said absolutely awful in that game, Tyler Huntley.
We treated this game like vacation.
Yeah.
We came in, we really didn't care about the game. We were more concerned about all of the off-the-field activities. We treated it like a vacation,
and it showed. It showed. Huntley's the world where it was terrible in that football game.
I know this sounds like the same argument that is made year in and year out, but watching ASU and Florida State, no offense to those two programs, that performance did not look like two teams that should have been in a bowl game. And the Sun Bowl is not one of the bottom tier ones. I mean, these were two teams that had fully accepted bowl bids. It's not like they were on the bubble or on the fringe.
I've always said
that was
like
bad.
I've always said I liked. I think the Sun Bowl's a decent game. I mean, there's worse.
There is.
I think it's a decent game. But, yeah, it's just, you know, and this is what's happening now right in today's day and age, right? You know, Benjamin's not playing, Brandon Ayuk. These guys are like, I'm not going to play in this game. It's meaningless. I'm not going to get hurt. Like, unless you're playing on a New Year's Day bowl or a playoffs, I mean, a lot of these kids that know they're going to be first-round draft picks, they, hey, why should I play?
But then it
what
really...
What reason do I have to play?
It's not, and I'm with you on that. I don't fault the student-athletes at all, but... Then you have guys like A.J. Carter, who I think had, 14 touches before the game.
Right, and he gets in the game, and he fumbles the
ball. Yeah, he's now the starting running back, and he's not ready for it.
Can't hold on to the ball. He wasn't ready, absolutely. I mean, Florida State had 470 yards, but and they did have the kid that was beat. It was Tamarcus Davis got beat on that long touchdown, and then the kid, Tamarian Terry, just outran Evan Fields to the end zone. And then, you know, Florida State took the lead, and then Hartz comes up with that. It was a 3rd and 4, comes up with a pick 6. Kurse Thomas ends up with an interception later. So I think their defense, they did a good job. Some of those kids, listen, they're not playing in the NFL. So for them, this is a big deal. You get to play in a bowl game. Your family's watching. I'm in a bowl game. You go to college, and for those players that aren't going to go play in the National Football League or somewhere else, Their thoughts are that I want to play in a bowl game. Like I do, I want to play in a bowl game. You want to play it obviously in bigger bowl games, but for some of those kids, that was a big deal. And they get the Frosted Flakes bath for Herm Edwards afterwards. So it's tough because everybody's on the same page during the regular season. You're trying to win all these games. You're on the same page. Nobody's leaving. Nobody's opting not to play. And then once the season ends, you do have players who aren't going to play, like Ayuk and Eno. You've got players who, like Tyler Huntley's like, man, I don't want to be here. And then you've got players who like, I want to play in this game. So it's like you got three different factions there. Players who are opting out. Players who, I'm going to play, but like this is a flag football game to me. And then players that are going to play hard. And sometimes it makes for really bad football.
Well, and on the other side of the things, after the game on Tuesday, Herm Edwards brought up how the coaching staff had to make a lot of adjustments with all of the moving pieces going on in Tempe.
We had to make a lot of adjustments. Coach White did a great job coordinating the defense. Coach Christensen ran the offense. I know Zach Hill is excited about running our offense going forward, but we came together as a staff. A lot of guys had to coach. We had GAs that they had to coach. You know, we had analysts all of a sudden. They had to coach. Kevin McGuire was coaching the offensive line. Dave Christensen. Marvin Lewis was coaching. He was up in the box. I mean, so we had to make a lot of adjustments due to the fact that we lost some coaches. That's football, though. And I think the players bought into it and did a nice job.
That's bowl season.
It is. I mean, that's what happens. You get a lot of coaching changes. And then if you're Florida State, like you're coaching and you're looking, up in the booth is your future coach, it's just so the players, he's watching. So those guys, a lot of those guys, you want to play hard because the coach is watching and he's at the game and he's watching. So you want to make a good impression because he's going to go look at the tape and everything. I was happy for Tony White. I think he was the right guy for the choice for the defensive coordinator. Obviously, he coached with Danny Gonzalez at San Diego State, was the secondary guy. When Danny left to go take the New Mexico job, a lot of people thought it might have been Antonio Pierce, but I was hoping it was going to be, Tony White. I think he did a really good job during that game. The defense looked very prepared for everything Florida State was throwing at them. So I am happy that looked really good. The defense and the turnovers for some of them were on the quarterback. The Blackman kid just played terrible. But I thought ASU's defense did a good job.
The other thing that gives me some hope and some, some optimism heading into next season is the way they actually finished out this year. They won their last three games, beating
Oregon,
the Rose Bowl champions. Then you beat your rival U of A and a down Florida State team that has a lot going on. So you can't. It's not like you beat three stalwarts, but the fact that you now go into the offseason with a three-game winning streak, a recruiting class that's coming in that's once again highly decorated, Jaden Daniels going from year one to year two under a new offensive coordinator, I think Arizona State is trending in the right direction going into year three with Herm Edwards.
And you've got kids like Huntley's not going to be back and Justin Herbert's not going to be back. So you've got.
And Clay Helton's still at USC.
Clay Helton's still there, which might be a benefit to you. So, yeah, I think the next year bodes well for their opportunity to maybe win that Pac-12 South because you've got the quarterback coming back. And again,
they may not be the favorite, but I think they should be one of the challengers.
But you know who's going to be Utah's losing their quarterback, and Utah's going to put a lot of kids in the NFL on that defense.
You know, now that you think about it, ASU might be the favorite.
Well, yeah, because I don't UCLA USC no, Colorado no, Arizona no. I would think they go.
You could make a case, yeah,
because of Jaden Daniels. Now listen, okay, you lose Eno and you lose Brandon Ayuk, but I mean Kyle Williams had a big play in that game, and you know Darby almost had a beautiful touchdown. I would have gave him that touchdown, too, man. He had that
ball. I thought he had it as well.
Like, I just, like, did he catch the ball? Yeah, he caught the ball.
He had control, in my mind.
He had it. His foot was, like, when they showed it in real time, I thought there's no way that was a touchdown. Then when they showed me the replay, I'm like, that's a touchdown. Then they came back and said, okay, that's not a touchdown. I'm like, ah, geez, okay, I can't figure this stuff out. All right, the Phoenix Suns, they got a nice win over Portland over the weekend, then lost to the Lakers last night. DeAndre Ayton coming off the bench. Why? We'll talk to the Suns GM, James Jones, next and find out the answers to your questions right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.